understand. Welcome to Mustard Aliens. I'm Matt.
I'm Richard.
I was hoping you'd jump in there with I'm Richard, but it didn't happen.
Was I supposed to say I'm Richard
first? Not necessarily.
First? You're just hoping.
That's all right. we riff on movies, DVDs, TV, things in the entertainment world that pique our interest.
And tickles our fancy.
Well, you keep that over on your side there, Skippy. All right, so you know, sooner or later, one of these things is actually going to get up on the net, and our friends and family will listen to it.
I would say at this point, sooner rather than later.
Could be this one.
Absolutely.
You never know. All right, let's begin, shall we? Oscar wrap-up is first on the list.
Well, you know what's funny is both you and I picked Crash to be the best picture winner, and I didn't realize that was like a big, shocking thing. I guess I'd read so many of these stories where they're sort of implying that, you know, it was bound to happen. It was coming down the pike, but I don't know. It wasn't any surprise to me.
Well, it's fascinating depending on your level of what interests you, of reading these articles about, you know, inside the Oscar race and the conventional wisdom and, you know, it's going to be Brokeback Mountain and, oh, the tide is shifting against Brokeback Mountain now and it's doing this and it's doing that. And you're kind of reading this going, hey, who cares?
Yep.
I mean, how to live your life to such a degree of who's voting for what for the Oscars. But, and you know, how much of this is people just manufacturing copy out of their butt? What was interesting to me about that was after Ang Lee got it for Best Director, you know, I turned to my girlfriend and I said, oh, well, that means Brokeback Mountain got Best Picture because it's not 95% of the time it's the same movie. So I was very snooty and like, well, that's that. And then when it happened, I said, well, I guess it didn't happen like that.
Well, I think for me, the fallout of this is all these, there's this undercurrent of all these people saying it's Hollywood conservatism and they just aren't ready for a gay movie. And I'm thinking, no, I just think the whole Brokeback Mountain phenomena peaked and people were like thinking, well, let's look around elsewhere. And a lot of people, it's kind of weird. They're sort of acting like Crash was this horrible movie that, you know, there's a lot of critics who called it the best movie of the year, Roger Ebert and others included. So they're sort of acting like Jim Carrey's like latest, opus, like, hey, get off of me, cat. Sorry.
All right.
It's sort of like having Liar Liar win Best Picture over Citizen Kane. And the simple fact is it was a good movie that won over a good movie, as near as I can tell. I don't get why people are so quick to call it some anti-gay thing.
It's like that older members of the Academy were uncomfortable or didn't actually see the movie Brokeback because of that. And then I also heard that Lionsgate sent out DVD copies of Crash to everyone.
Yeah,
it was 135,000 free DVDs sent out.
This is what E. Annie Proulx, the writer of Brokeback Mountain, was alleging in possibly the most sourest of grapes article in the history of sour grapes articles. She wrote this article, and she actually said at the end of it, saying, if this sounds like sour grapes, well, so be it. But it was this article in The Guardian where she was just unbelievably dismissive of everything. And I don't get it. I mean, it's like, wow, so I liked Crash. Apparently I'm the biggest idiot on the planet Earth because that was clearly a horrible movie. And I am a conservative bigot for deciding Crash was better than Brokeback Mountain. I mean, look at all the awards. Every single award was won by somebody from a different movie. Every one. There's like, with the exception of the minor awards where like Memoirs of a Geisha seemed to clean up, it was all spread around. So why all of a sudden is it some big backlash that it didn't win Best Picture?
I don't know.
Just crazy. Anyway, what'd you think of the rest of the Oscars?
I quite enjoyed them. I thought Jon Stewart was very good.
Absolutely.
I admit I was expecting a little more Daily Show-esque.
Yeah.
And that's to my fault because he said in an article I think I read here that, you know, the goal wasn't to bring the Daily Show and the desk to the Oscars.
Yeah.
Even though he did bring some Daily Show writers. But I thought it went very well. I thought Jon Stewart did a great job. I thought he attacked it with the appropriate level of making fun of Hollywood, being respectful, not stumbling. Although it's interesting to note how many of his comedy tics he just reuses.
Yeah.
And mostly that's fine and that's good and people do it. But
and this is a new audience.
Seeing them in a different environment kind of illustrates to me that, you know, he's got some comedy tools he just likes to use and trot out.
Did you notice that the show basically ended exactly on time? And I
think that old chestnut of the Oscars going for 5 hours is about done.
Well, what's interesting is it used to go a long time, and it was always this big painful thing. But you know what's funny is, actually, it used to also get huge ratings, and it's getting lesser and lesser ratings. And I enjoyed it, but it really is completely by the numbers, as they get rid of what they used to, all the stuff people used to make fun of, like the crazy musical numbers, and it goes on forever. And after it's over, everybody bemoan it and how horrible this was and everything. And I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe there's a correlation by the fact that you've condensed it down so much, a luminary thing that people aren't watching anymore, because people love watching, to some extent, a train wreck. And seeing Rob Lowe singing, you know, Rolling on the River with Snow White, sure, it's a train wreck, but it's watchable. And they just kind of eliminated a lot of that stuff. So I kind of miss the old days where it's like, oh my God, is it over already and going to bed or whatever? They used to in the West Coast, they, you know, they'd show it on a delay, so it would be at the same time as the East Coast, but now they don't do it. And for like the fourth Oscars in a row, I showed up 40 minutes into the Oscars forgetting that they show it live. So I missed the whole, I watched it later on thing, but every time I forget that, I always forget. Well, it's not that I forget. I had to work, but it was still a little annoying. But anyway,
what else was I going to say? I appreciated the fact they didn't do that giving out the lesser awards in the audience thing that they did last year.
That
was a train wreck. Although I appreciated as trying something new and different. I'll give them credit for that. But it clearly didn't work, and I'm glad they recognized that. What else was I going to say about the Oscars?
Who do you think had the best speech?
Probably Clooney.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, Clooney.
It's funny. It's cool. It establishes his cred as the single coolest person right now in Hollywood. Dismissive of himself, yet funny.
Well, and also making the point that, you know, people are making fun of Hollywood for being out of touch, but we're addressing the issues
to the serious thing, he absolutely, that was perfect. I mean, leave it to him.
Really, nobody ran embarrassingly long on their speeches. And how they cut off two people, they cut off one, you know, when it's like three people up there, I can't remember what the first was.
It was one of them. I can't remember. It was one totally unfairly, because the second I was about to speak
and then the last one, the producer's up there for Crash.
Yeah.
The first person does it, and as soon as the second person goes up to the mic, music and out to commercial. Yeah. How do you cut off the producer of the best picture?
Yeah, unbelievable.
You know what? Let them talk for 15 seconds, okay? Yeah. That was really uncalled for.
Yeah. But it was still pretty good. I also liked Reese Witherspoon's acceptance speech, and I'm trying to figure out, I don't know, they're all pretty good. It was a good Oscars. I liked having a lot of different movies win. I enjoy that.
And then the reaction to it, where, you know, different critics, you know, it was a great Oscars and Jon Stewart was sublime versus it was horrible and Jon Stewart sucked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a complete difference of opinion. There really isn't a consensus. And, you know, Stewart gets back on The Daily Show and he's like, either I was great or I was horrible. You know, and he's totally having fun with that and recognizing it.
Well, he knew going in, he was talking about he used to watch all the old Oscars and see how they did. And he was bringing up good points of the conventional wisdom after the fact. It takes root way after, because he was saying, you know, famously, the person who's supposed to be the worst in history is Letterman. And he was saying, you know, I watched it. Letterman killed that night.
I didn't see it.
I remember when it was on.
I
enjoyed it.
Something happened and I didn't see that.
Well, he killed, as he put it. And he was saying that even the days following, he didn't, you know, do poorly. But later people kept harping on. And to some extent, it was Letterman himself that kept harping on the Oprah Uma. They're so goofy. So in his joke where he's trying to introduce them, and then as he pointed out, Stewart pointed out the punchline to his little joke, it was Oprah, Uma, meet Keanu. It was just a stupid joke, but it killed. But anyway, the conventional wisdom now is that he's the worst ever, and he clearly wasn't. So the funny thing is, who knows how Stewart is going to be thought of a year from now, 2 years from now. But right now, I thought he did great. I thought he was great.
I agree. Although one thing about the Oscars that really was irritating to me, the multiple times they tried to force down your throat the notion that you need to watch movies in a theater. Don't even think about trying to watch them on a DVD or how, you know, download them on a laptop. Are you high? No. You've got to watch them in the theater as a communal experience. And you know what? That's valid, but we all know what you're doing here.
Yeah, it's pathetic. It's the only thing that was worse than that ever was the Grammys like 2 years ago, where they had a bunch of people online, or they had a bunch of people like in this little booth behind the stage, and they were searching to find out how many illegal downloads were going on while the Grammys were taking place to give people a feel for how it's ruining the music industry. And they had like a running ticker of all the
retarded.
Oh, it was incredible. And it was the most pandering, painful thing. And it did no good. It's just like floundering. And that there, you know, going in a theater, I'm thinking, hey, I totally agree. But also, what about the billions you've made off DVDs in the last few years? I mean, that ties into
make the theater going experience enjoyable again.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do anything about obnoxious crowds, but you can do something about, 5 minutes of Coke and Mountain Dew commercials in front of it.
Absolutely.
You can do something about, you know, projectionists that don't actually do their jobs.
Yep.
So maybe bring those things back under control.
Yeah, and then
start making some movies that people care about. I wanted to see a movie this weekend. I thought there was something opening that I wanted to see, and I go and I check the new releases, and I'm faced with The Hills Have Eyes, The Shaggy Dog, and Failure to Launch. I thought The Shaggy Dog had already opened and left. That's how out of it I am.
I know.
And yeah, you know, God bless Tim Allen, because I know Disney gave him a break when they kept him on the show because he was like a coke-addled comedian before they gave him Home Improvement.
And, yeah, well, they got him on the show. I mean,
clearly he owes them his life.
Well, no, don't forget, Tim Allen has made an enormous amount of money. Those Santa Claus movies, they made an enormous amount of money. Santa Claus 1 and 2 combined made $500 million. So he is a clear moneymaker when it comes to these kids' movies. Now, I don't think that, what was that, Jungle to Jungle? I don't think that did that well. But Tim Allen, people forget that he does, he sort of follows the Chevy Chase model, where he used to do like one movie every 2 years, and they honestly were consistently successful until Chevy Chase stopped making successful movies, and now nobody wants to hire him. But Tim Allen, he makes monies on these movies.
And that's fine, and there's perfect validity to making movies, family-friendly movies.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as a kid, you tend to watch movies over and over and over, and they imprint, and you know,
I hate about that particular movie is the marketing. The ad, the one sheet of it is a picture of a dog, a shaggy dog, but it's got Tim Allen's eyes. It is so creepy to see a guy's eyes on this dog. It is legitimately the creepiest thing ever.
You know, I look at it every time I see a commercial. I just keep thinking, ooh, Disney's got him by the short and curlies, don't they? Regardless of how much money he's making or if he's having fun, that was my reaction to that.
Well, when I was watching the previews of it, I was thinking, regardless of what, I think he thinks he's going to make a bunch of money. But the thing I found about the movie was that it was pretty clear that must have been a painful shoot, because a whole lot of the movie is him running around on all fours, and it's pretty
knocking
clear
over grandma on a walker.
Well, it's pretty obvious that they probably had some kit to support him that they digitally erased, but it still had to gotten really old running around with your knuckles on the ground and your feet on ground with your butt in the air.
I agree.
So anyway,
that being said, there's two movies I want to see next weekend, Inside Man and V for Vendetta.
I'm looking forward to that.
Anyway,
increasingly so.
Just, you know, for the president of the Motion Picture Academy to come out there and start preaching about go to a theater was just really retarded. I can't believe they thought that would work or do anything.
I don't know. It's that typical self, you know, make ourselves feel better kind of stuff that they do.
I mean, honestly, what did they think was going to happen? That I'm sitting on my computer downloading a BitTorrent of whatever's in the theater, and I'm like, oh, wait, you're right. I should go see this in the theater. I'm going to stop this download right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on, shall we?
Absolutely.
Philips movie ad is next on my list, talking about theater experience. Tell us what it's about.
Well, this was, you know, the Philips Corporation decided to do an ad in the theaters. You know how there's all these ads. You go there and it's a friggin' Mountain Dew ad, or it's a Coke ad or whatever, and it drives you bonkers, because it's like, I paid to go to a movie and then I'm sitting here seeing these stupid friggin' ads. And Philips decided to put an ad up, and the ad was 10 seconds long, and it's...
Well, They bought 4 minutes worth of screen time from the company that resells to like most of the theater chains.
Exactly. So they bought 4 minutes of these ads, and they decided we're only going to show a 15-second ad. And that ad said something to the effect of, we're going to give you a break and cut this short by 3 minutes and 45 seconds to give you more time to not stare at ads. And it was like this cool move, and obviously a branding move for Philips, and people thinking, what a cool organization. Well, the company that they were trying to buy it from refused to run the ad, period. Refused to cut this time short. And I'm thinking, what an FU to that audience. What a, and honestly, I understand why they're doing it. They don't want to have ads kind of highlight how baloney and how oppressive their stupid system is. But still, it was great for Philips. I mean, I say God bless them for doing that. It's kind of funny, this $1 billion corporation sticking it up for the little man, but that's kind of what they were doing. So I'm just completely sick of me going to these theaters, 20 minutes, you know, of ads, then a bunch of trailers. And honestly, I love trailers. I have no problem with trailers, but I'm paying a lot of money to have to basically be a demographic where they can sell ads for. I'm thinking that's what TV is about. TV is quote free. And so they're selling you ads while you're doing it. And when I log on to the New York Times, newyorktimes.com is free, and I'm seeing a whole bunch of ads. And if I go to salon.com, I have to click on the little ad to watch it. I recognize that. When I'm going to theater, I'm paying money, and they're making money off of me further. It drives me nuts, and it's one of the major reasons why I see less and less movies these days. Mm-hmm. And I can't be the only one.
So it's, I don't know. Props for Philips for trying it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Daily Show downloads. You emailed this to me. I didn't look at the email for like 2 days because I was busy.
Yeah.
I see it. I email it to you, and you're like, dude, I emailed that to you 2 days ago. What's
wrong? I think I've been mentioning to you, I don't know, I've had this weird...
In practically every podcast we've done, we've talked about this in some form or another.
I just basically have been consistently saying I don't watch much TV anymore, but I have cable. I pay this enormous amount for cable, and what I'm realizing is I'm basically paying for The Daily Show because it's about the only show I watch. Other shows I've been able to get in other means, like on iTunes, I've been able to download Drawn Together, which I enjoy, and other stuff. But I kept thinking, boy, the minute they get The Daily Show on there, and it's a reasonably priced thing, I'm going to leave cable. Well, D-Day happened on Wednesday, and I signed up for it, and it's awesome. It's kind of funny because the one thing that they haven't really talked about with iTunes is that iTunes, they're clearly trying to make a different way of getting content to your TV. And that's what the whole Mac Mini is going towards and everything else. And iTunes would be like a hub for buying content in a different way. Well, the problem is iTunes is designed right now, the videos are designed for the video iPod. So it's lower resolution. It doesn't look bad. It looks like the kind of the quality of regular TV to some extent, but it's clearly half the resolution it could be. So basically, watching it, I'm going, wow, this is great. But at some point, they're going to have to realize they have to put these out at higher resolution. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if they're going to charge more. Because right now, they're basically, and God bless Steve Jobs for coming up with, you know, an appropriate price structure and sticking it to it. And he basically said, well, for a month of The Daily Show, $10. That sounds about reasonable. It works out to like about 60 cents a show. That sounds about reasonable. And that's what he's doing. And I like that. It seems reasonable to me, too.
That's what's preventing them from moving forward with a deal from the other from movie distributors and getting iTunes to deliver movies and other TV shows is the majority of the producers, the companies, don't want to abide by the single price, you know, theory. They want more flexibility. They want more control. And
exactly.
That's why you haven't seen Apple roll out a bigger, better service yet.
And they've been, and of course, Apple's clearly working on it and they're clearly doing all this stuff, but it's, yeah. And it's funny because, and the music industry, once Apple showed that, oh yeah, we can sell 1 billion songs in a year, or in about two and a half years, that all of a sudden the music industry start going, no, we want to have flexibility. And God bless Steve Jobs says, nope, it is 99 cents. Absolutely, unequivocally, I'm not going to change it. 99 cents. And thank God he has that power to be able to do that.
Well, we'll see. Maybe the labels don't want to re-up the deal.
Oh, I know they don't want to do it. And hopefully he will win this battle because he has so much control because of his control of the software. But it was, I hope he wins because it's clearly the thing that's driving me and others to these things, because I know that consistency. And what the labels are trying to do is unbelievably short-sighted. I mean, the fact is you walk into a movie theater and Titanic costs the same as Blair Witch Project, and it should cost the same as Blair Witch Project. So anyway, I like the pricing structure, and I will be giving up cable in the next week or two. Except for I'm just still worried. There is occasional shows that come down the pike that I won't be able to see, but screw it. Sooner or later, they're going to be on iTunes anyway.
Good for you, buddy. Good for you.
I mean, we say that, and you say that dismissively, but it is funny. I mean, there's been times in my life where literally everything seemed to revolve around for TV with me. I mean, I literally watched, in a week, over 100 hours of TV. I mean, it's like incredible.
And I certainly used to watch a lot when I was working through college, full-time job and practically a full-time course load.
Yeah.
Something's got to give, and it was TV. And I remember one night, I'd say, you know what? I think I'm going to skip ER tonight. I've got a lot to do. Yeah. And I never went back. And turns out my life went along just fine without ER.
Yeah. Yeah. Same for me.
But still, I'm out of school. I've got a regular full-time job. I occasionally do a part-time job as a fill-in basis. So I finally have more free time than I've ever had, and I'm making sure, I'm really, really trying to not let TV take over that additional free time, and I already think I watch too much. Let's go down the list, shall we? The Daily Show, every day. I set my system up to record it, so I'm usually a day behind, but that's fine. But
that's cool, because you can watch, if they have a lame interview, you can just spend 12 minutes and you get pretty much all the good stuff.
Yeah, but I'll watch the lame interviews. You never know if they're going to be lame.
I don't know. Some of them, they pretty obvious from the get-go if it's some actor promoting a movie. Okay. Well, it's still 22 minutes because you don't have to
watch commercials. On occasion, the Colbert Report.
It's getting a lot better.
Which I think is fine, but that's just like, I don't want to get sucked into another show. I record them all, but I end up deleting most of them.
I went ahead and signed up for the multipass for the Colbert Report as well.
Let's see. Monday's CSI Miami, which is my most brain-dead, just watch it for la la la. Mainly, when that show opens with 5 minutes of women's beach volleyball, that is genius. I was telling all my friends, every show needs to open with 5 minutes of women's beach volleyball.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Anyway, that's just mental fluff, but I still kind of like it. Tuesday's House. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of House. Nova and Frontline on PBS. Depending on the subject, sometimes they'll do stuff I don't care about. But Wednesday, what's on Wednesdays? South Park.
I don't even know.
Lost.
Yeah.
And I used to watch Law and Order, but that has dropped off.
Yeah, that dropped off for me about 4 years ago.
Let's see. Thursdays.
Cosby Show, Night Court.
CSI and Without a Trace. Fridays, Battlestar Galactica. Nothing on Saturday. And then Sunday, 60 Minutes, West Wing, and Family Guy, American Dad.
Wow.
And when The West Wing is a rerun, The Simpsons. So I'm going to pick up The Simpsons reruns after the season is over because I decided to go with The West Wing this year. So that's essentially the TV I watch.
Wow. I can't. There's nothing I watch regularly, but I will. Like on actual TV, about once a week, I'll turn on. Once a week, I'll go, it's Tuesday. And I'll flip it on to see if maybe Mythbusters is on. And it's invariably one I've already seen before. And then in the past, maybe once a week I'd flip it on because it's 11 and I hadn't gone to bed yet. I'll think, I'll watch The Daily Show. Although this week I did watch this new show, Black White, which I loved. And it's like, God, I'm going to give up cable. I won't be able to see Black White. So I'll probably give it up right after Black White's little 6 week run is off. But I was thinking the other day, I sort of really enjoyed seeing these things in different ways, like on DVD when I want to and stuff. And I'm beginning to wonder, God, am I like, is it people like me that are the reason that Arrested Development got canceled and got its season cut shortly? Because I pointedly, season 2, after they made the big commitment to it, right at the beginning of season 2, I said, you know what? I enjoyed watching season one so much on DVD that I didn't watch any of it so I could buy it on DVD. And I'm wondering, because it did pretty well on DVD, but it did poorly on TV. And I'm wondering, is there other people like me? And I hope I'm not part of the problem. And I'm like sucking. I'm taking these shows that we like to watch later and killing them and making shows that are like brain candy for of the moment, like American Idol. Making those shows become the only shows that are on TV. I hope I'm not doing that.
Oh, the other show I try to watch, but I think it conflicts with Thursday, is My Name is Earl. That's a great show, but I haven't been able to watch it consistently.
Yeah, I watched the first three episodes and I loved it, but I just forgot it. Anyway.
Although all this TV watching lets me do something that you are unable to do, and that is enjoy the promos for the network's other shows.
Yeah, I do get to miss most of those.
Such as The Unit. Oh my! And this is with the Dennis Haysbert. Is that, am I pronouncing that correctly?
That's right. Correct.
He is the he was the president from the first he was running for president.
He was first Senator David Palmer. Then he was President David Palmer.
Anyway, he's like the lead of the unit, which is the super secret black ops team that goes around and solves world crises, but their families don't know what they do, and you know, so that, you know, it's saving the world by day, returning to their wives at night. How was your day at the office, honey? Oh, it was a rough day at the office, as they see scenes of RPGs and things blowing up, and it's, you know, Robert Patrick is in it, and you can't be here, you're going to blow my cover. Is this hot enough for you? As she takes off her top. Okay, let's make out. It's the most overblown. It just looks bombastic and horrendous, and I just read last night David Mamet is like writing for it.
Yeah, it's like he's like the co-producer of this show,
and
he wrote. Yeah,
I haven't seen all of Mamet's films, but what I've seen, the dialogue has never rung overblown or false.
Well, it's got a very specific rhythm, and you love it. You get
right,
it's like Shakespeare. You get right into it, and
it's never, and regardless of whether or not you appreciate the rhythm, to me at least, it's never rung false.
Yeah.
Everything in these promos rings false.
Yeah.
And it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to watch.
Yeah, you wonder if it is as bad as it looks. You wonder what in the hell got David Mamet into this, because it's not. You just, most everything he does has some sort of sniff of quality about it. Even if it doesn't do that well, even if it doesn't, you know, it might be a lesser one that didn't get as good reviews or whatever. They have just they're so particular, and there's so much to love about them, even if you don't love them. What was that movie, The Heist, a couple of years ago, which I loved. It was crazy.
The Gene Hackman.
Yeah, the Gene Hackman one.
I thought it was okay.
Okay, well, I loved it, okay. but I could understand not loving it. But it was like, it was classic David Mamet. It was like a bunch of little crazy crap stuck on crazy crap with this very particular dialogue of people, you know. And the all-time greatest one was House of Games, the one he filmed in Seattle. Did you ever
see
that?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God.
You don't
it's
have
just,
that on DVD, do you?
No, I got to find that one. See? But it's just so great, because the first time you watch it, you almost think the actors are to some extent sleepwalking, because they're performing this very particular rhythm. And later you end up recognizing a lot of the actors.
Was it actually filmed in Seattle?
Yeah, it's filmed in Seattle.
God bless you for that.
And it was William H. Macy was in it, in a small role. And
as people who live in Seattle, we are forever subjected to Vancouver standing in as Seattle. You'll get the obligatory overshot with the Space Needle.
Yep.
And that's about it. Everything else is in Vancouver. And it drives me
Oh, it was
batty.
It was great to see. It's a truly great, wonderful movie. And it's filmed literally in some of the places, like the old, what was it, the 311 Billiard Club. Did you ever go down there in Belltown? And I think it burned down or they closed it down. But it was like in there. I'm going, oh, my God, I've like smoked cigars and shot pool in there. And there they are filming in there. It was really cool.
Singles, it was filmed in Seattle.
Yep.
Thank you, Cameron Crowe, and
the Hendersons. Thank you, whatever nameless hack that directed that.
But God, Stakeout, filmed in Vancouver.
I know.
God, what else? UC Undercover. That was a show on NBC that lasted a half a second.
Oh, man.
Oh, my. That was an overblown, bombastic piece of crap. But I remember the opening, like the opening 5 minutes of the pilot, it was like a car chase on I-90 going eastbound. I was like, oh, that's cool. And then the rest of it's in Vancouver.
The best.
What was that show with? God, it was they.
Well, isn't Grey's Anatomy supposedly take place in Seattle?
Yeah, I've never watched it, so
I don't either. I'm not interested in that soap opera crap.
God, what, it was the one with that was a show on Fox. I think that debuted the same time as Firefly.
Oh,
the guy does Dominic Purcell. The guy doesn't know his past. He pops up on an island. Oh. He's trying to learn it. Set in Seattle, filmed in Vancouver.
Well, what was that Jessica Alba show?
Angel.
Dark Angel. And didn't that, I remember the first scene is her on a bombed out space needle.
She's like rappelling down the space needle or flying off or something. Absolutely. Yeah, that stupid. Was a horrible, horrible show.
Well, the best movies in Seattle were some of these ones that were filmed in the mid 70s. There's one, John Wayne, one of his last movies called McHugh, and he plays like a grizzled Seattle cop. And it's awesome to see him like driving all over Seattle up totally empty freeways. It's like, what city is this?
Wow.
And then at one point there's a chase and it takes place across the rooftops of the Edgewater Theater, and it's great. And there's another movie called, I think The Last Detail might have been filmed in Seattle, which is the Randy Quaid, I think Jack Nicholson movie, and it takes place it's all filmed down in the old porno district. You know, Belltown used to be all old porno theaters, so it was all filmed down there, and it's kind of cool to see your town in different times, especially seeing them drive on the freeway when there's no cars on the freeway.
Wow.
It just seems so unbelievably eons ago. Anyway, hey, I see you're perusing my magazine. What are you reading there?
This is the Vanity Fair.
Which they finally sent me because I was too embarrassed to buy it in the
stores.
This is
the one with the naked Scarlett Johansson and Keira Knightley on the cover.
Yeah.
Did you have something you wanted to talk about?
No,
about the Vanity
just
Fair?
Noticed you had made such a big statement about it last time that it now has arrived.
Well, man, that's fantastic. I'm enjoying it as I flip through here.
It's got some good articles. So what's next, dude? What's on the list?
Well, the other thing, just in terms of overblown promos,
yep.
Prison Break on Fox.
Ah.
Oh, my God.
It's most important series in America.
Well, it's fantastic. It's amazing because the promos for this show are practically the same no matter what week it is.
Yep.
They're going over the wall tonight. He's being executed in 24 hours. They need to escape. Now.
If
the
you
time
see,
to break out is now.
If you must see one episode of Prison Break, this is the one.
He's tunneling tonight. The breakout is tonight. Every single week seems to be the same promo. And it's mind-boggling.
It looks awful.
And you're just like, wow, thank God I didn't get sucked into that because it looks horrendous.
There's nothing I hate more. And I know you liked this one series, but there's one series that I started watching and it didn't get better. It got worse to me. And that was Boomtown. And I didn't like Boomtown.
I liked it, but
to me it had a premise that it didn't fully develop, and then it just kind of morphed into something else.
As they realized it was hard to maintain.
Exactly. So from that angle, and there's nothing I hate more than getting sucked into a show that had promise, isn't fulfilling the promise, and then you have to like ask yourself, do I stick with this because it might get better? Do I not? And I like watching shows from the beginning that are home runs from the beginning and stay great. Sopranos, The Shield, you know, stuff like that where they...
Sopranos is back on this
week. Yeah, I know.
This
week tonight, I think. Yeah, it's tonight. I'm looking forward to that.
I think there's only been one season that I actually watched it on HBO when it happened. And the rest, I've got one through four on DVD.
I have one, and then I just stopped buying because I realized... Holy crap, their pricing model for these, unlike other TV shows, are like $30. They're asking like $70 for them, $50 if you're at Costco. And I just thought, I just can't afford that. I just didn't do it.
I missed last season.
Yeah.
I'll watch it. I think it's a great show. I'll watch it eventually. And I, you know, same thing with this season. I'm going to miss it. I'll see it eventually. But, you know, you're seeing some stuff bubble up about something big happens in the first episode.
Well, obviously somebody's going to get killed.
Somebody dies, and it's, you know, who, and people are getting pissed because reviewers are apparently making it a little too obvious, which is really irritating.
I was on Howard Stern. They're making a joke about, they were talking about how, or like Artie Lang was talking about, it was like this Oscar rap party. You know, people after they've been filming, they just look exhausted and everything. And he said, this one actor, he said, he looked pretty tan and rested at that show, implying that he probably got whacked or whatever, and it was just kind of funny. But anyway, I don't really care about that. Sometimes I get crazy about spoilers, but Actually, I did get really mad at last year's spoilers because they did have a major character. Since it's when I say last season, it was two friggin' years ago. So yeah. I'm not probably giving anything away that Drea Di Matteo's character got whacked. And
right.
Of course, we know because she went on a different TV series after that. But so when she gets whacked, so nobody knew anything, and I had it taped or TiVo'd, and I was going to watch it the next day. And I was listening to Howard Stern, and some guy goes, "Hey, Bill, or Billy, you're on the air from Seattle. Drea Di Matteo gets whacked." Click. I was like, God dang it.
That's funny.
That is so funny. Oh, God dang maddening.
Oh, yeah. Although, many props, because the last episode of Lost for, like, I don't know, a certain amount of time till, what month is this? We're in March.
Yeah.
Like, the last episode till April. And I saw the whole thing. My system didn't cut off the end. Thank you very much to either ABC or the Dish DVR, whose software sucks.
Yep.
So I was happy about that. And then the 90-minute Battlestar Galactica finale, it cut off like the last 30 seconds.
Hmm.
So I think I missed a line of dialogue or two, and I'm like, ugh!
Well, at least with Lost, you always have that $2 option.
Calling
on
friends
iTunes.
Around saying, do you still have Lost on your TV?
No, I'm saying, you also have that $2 option if you're willing to pay.
Not Lost, Battlestar Galactica. Yeah, I'm not going to pay $2 to see, you know, the last 30 seconds of something. That's ridiculous. I'm gonna hopefully go over to a friend's house and see if they've got it still on their TiVo and see if that was cut off.
See,
there.
To me, the energy put into going to a friend's house, seeing if they have it,
well,
$2
is worth it. Well, I would just go for that. That's not efficient. I'm all about efficiency, my friend. But, you know, that lets me ramble on about Battlestar Galactica again.
Absolutely.
Done this like every week for the past 3 weeks.
It's a good show.
You know, I was talking about how it's daring and innovative, and it does risky things that are not typical TV. And certainly the finale bears this out. And this is a spoiler warning. I'm going to reveal what happens in the season finale of Battlestar Galactica. Basically, there's an election between Mary McDonald's character. Mary McDonald? Mary O'Donnell?
No, it's McDonnell.
Mary McDonald's character.
The one from Dances with Wolves?
Yeah.
Yeah, McDonald.
The good President Rosalyn of the civilians in Battlestar Galactica and Vice President Baltar. There's an election between the two of them, and Rosalyn basically arranges to have it fixed so she'll win, because she thinks it would be horrendous for Baltar to win. Which, and sort of the analogy there is, the good Democrat fixes the election so that the evil Republican can't win.
The way it works in real life.
Yeah, because that's what happened last election. And, you know, it's sort of a reversal against stereotype, if you will.
Yeah.
And then Command Admiral Adama, you know, comes in and says, you can't do this. You'll be a criminal. You'll be no better. You'll hate yourself. It makes us criminals. We can't do it. The people have spoken. Even if you think they made the wrong choice, you have to honor it. And so they go back and they let Baltar win. And as he's doing his acceptance speech, someone else on one of the other ships sets off a nuclear bomb. And it's somebody that it was like an ex-Cylon that he's got a thing for. So he's devastated by it. And his head is down on his desk, and he looks, you know, he's got stubble. He looks like crap. And the camera does a push in onto his head, and then it does a pull out, and it says 1 year later. So they've settled on this planet. And, like, the Battlestar Galactica and the Battlestar Pegasus are orbiting, and there's hardly anybody in them because everybody is settled on this planet. And so basically, and they totally changed the dynamic of the show from this ragtag fleet trying to, you know, flee the Cylons and find somewhere to settle and find Earth. Now they're settled. There's hardly anybody in the military presence of these Battlestars protecting them in orbit.
So are they gonna go back and do flashbacks to do this, or are they just gonna start right in? Are they gonna explain the different dynamics now? Or
there might be some flashbacks, because they've said in the podcast to the show, which are fantastic by the way, that they're thinking about doing that. But this is the new reality. It's not a Bobby in the Shower Dallas thing. It's not a dream. You know, they jumped ahead a year.
Yep.
And then the Cylon said, we're going to leave you alone because we think our attack on mankind was a mistake. And then they show up a year later after having not molested them and saying, actually, now we are going to, you better not resist. And the what's left of the military presence in orbit basically jumps out like a hyperspace jump, because they're completely unprepared to fight them. And that's how it ends. The Sweet. Military has left, and like 30,000 of the 50,000 people are on this settlement, and the Cylons just occupied them.
Sweet.
And now there's and so it totally changes the dynamic of the show. There's no new episodes till frigging October. It's, you know, we're recording this in mid-March, which then you forwarded something that. There's talk that NBC might take over the show.
Yeah, that's what I had read was that...
The parent company, Vivendi Universal.
Yeah, Vivendi Universal.
Still, yep. Is that still who... Or did Vivendi say... Anyway, whoever the parent company is who owns both NBC and Science Fiction Channel, that's why you can do
that.
Well,
and they're talking about, putting it on the big channel. And they've done that before where they've where shows... start out on one channel, end up on another. Often it goes the other direction, like Last Comic Standing went from comedy to ABC. I can't remember. But anyway, I just look at that and go, if they moved it to NBC, it's the absolute death knell. Because what's kind of funny is, in the old days, that was like, wow, it's from basic cable where it gets 3 million viewers to the networks where you get tens of millions. Well, nowadays, a hit show on regular TV gets 7 million viewers, and on cable it gets 5 million viewers. It's not that much different, but I just look at this and go, there's going to be so much pressure on NBC to conform, to explain all the stuff that's gone on before, and basically after a short period of time, it's just not working out. We need to find some other room on a schedule. So here's a show that could go on for years on the Sci-Fi network, but won't. And it will go on NBC. They won't put it on Sci-Fi. They might show its reruns on the Sci-Fi. But essentially what's going to happen is they're going to put it on. It's going to do middling well. It's going to have a lot of pressure to tinker with it. And then they'll never say, no, you can go back to Sci-Fi. It will kill it. That's what I'm assuming. And I think that's just awful. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it's just
awful. I kind of had a middling reaction, which I'll explain in a minute. Yeah. I was talking to some friends in a chat room, and I mentioned it, and they had the exact same reaction. Oh, that'll kill it.
Yeah.
And then we moved on to something else, but I thought it was interesting, and I thought, well, not necessarily, but my thinking would be, because Ronald Moore, who's the driving force behind this thing, the showrunner, the executive producer, I don't know how much power he has in terms of creative control. But if the other network takes it over and he can't do anything about that, if they start saying, do this, do that, and he doesn't want to, he'll stop. Yeah. He's not going to do a show that he's not happy with anymore, because I think he was on Star Trek for a long time, and I think he got really burned out about, you know, being dictated to. Like, you're going to do it like this, you're going to do it like that. These characters can't ever change. And if NBC comes in and starts dictating things like that, he's going to say, I've done that before. I hate it. Goodbye.
He'll stop, and then they'll bring in the guy that they brought in to replace what's-his-name on West Wing, and they'll continue on with a cruddy show that will die.
So
that's my thinking.
It could be. I think if Ronald Moore leaves, a lot of people would maybe give it a shot.
Because they just don't nowadays. I mean, people forget shows like MASH, its first season out in the early 70s, was the single lowest rated show of all network shows. And they stuck with it. And then it ended 11 years later as the highest rated show in the history of television. Seinfeld, remember the first season of Seinfeld was four episodes called The Seinfeld Chronicles. And then they came back and it was constantly on the bubble. Shows don't get on the bubble anymore. They have to be out of the park home runs in the beginning. And then they decide, okay, maybe we won't mess with the formula.
How do you explain According to Jim? Are people watching something like that?
Enough people are watching a show like that and it costs so little money that they can do it. I mean, just think about it that way. They definitely, there's a need out there for sitcoms, and since there's not that many sitcoms out there, people pay that, and it costs a certain amount of money, and if it costs any more, they'd kill the show. And they just, you know, it just kind of goes on and on and on. And then when it gets to a certain point, they recognize, I'd be willing to bet the network owns a big part of that show, because once they realize, God, well, we stuck with it for a couple of years. If we can stick with it for 5-6 years, then we're going to make a mint in syndication or who knows what. Although I always wonder about that. Who the hell buys this for syndication? Who's going to want to watch a rerun of a show that was really horrible at the beginning. I don't ever watch even Seinfeld reruns, and I used to love Seinfeld, but watching him now, it just feels really old and anachronistic and stuff. So,
well, maybe they're looking at the increasing number of channels that just need content.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, you're probably right.
Anyway, that's Battlestar Galactica, fantastic show. I think you can buy the episodes on iTunes, and if you haven't been watching it, go buy them all.
I wish they would sell it. The one thing they don't have is, or at least right now, is they have their new multi-passes, which is great, but they're not going to do that for shows like Battlestar Galactica. They're only going to do that for shows that are like daily. But if they had a season, I'd probably buy the season and just sit down and start watching, because you talk about them so god dang much that I have to start watching them.
I'm sorry.
No, hey, I mean it in a good sense.
Look at it this way. Next week, no Battlestar Galactica to talk about.
No, I mean it in a positive sense, dude. You're saying you're taking it negatively.
Well, I don't want the.
I love science fiction, and I want to. And I definitely want to do it. So I think I was thinking about doing that. The problem is the only way I'm going to do it is to start from last season and work my way forward. So I know I've got like literally 30 hours ahead of me.
There was, they brought in Dean Stockwell.
Yeah.
As a guest star in the both parts one and two. He was fantastic. He basically played a preacher.
Yep.
And here's another spoiler alert. Turns out he's a Cylon.
Ah.
And they discover it because basically there are multiple copies of the Cylons, and they bring one copy up from a mission, and another guy who's seen the other copy realizes, oh look, it's a duplicate. They must be a Cylon. And so they've got the Dean Stockwell number one in the brig, and they're dragging the other Dean Stockwell into the brig, and he's saying, I'm not a Cylon. What do you got? This is ridiculous. I'm not a Cylon. And then he sees the other cop, and he's like, oh, well, okay then. Dean Stockwell did a fantastic job.
I like Dean Stockwell.
All right. I just want to throw that in there. Do you have anything else?
He's the boy with the green hair.
What?
Did you ever, you know, Dean Stockwell is a children's actor. And there was a movie they used to show on Showtime all the time, and he was I can't remember how he ended up with green hair, but the whole point was he had green hair in this movie. He was like a little 10-year-old kid, Dean Stockwell.
Yeah,
it was like in the 50s. It was a goofy movie, and the coloring was so bad in the movie that you couldn't quite tell he had green hair, but that was the whole point to the movie. Anyway.
Okay.
I digress.
Do you have anything else you would like to talk about this week? That's the best part of the show.
Moms for the poor.
All right.
Nothing else. I can hear the music ramping up in the background.
All right, I guess we're done. My name is Matt.
I am Richard.
You've been listening to Mustard Aonaise. Shame on you.
That was good.